Good evening. You're listening to special election coverage on KRBD Ketchikan. My name's Layla Carey, and for the next hour, we'll be talking with candidates for the Ketchikan Gateway Borough School Board. With me here in the studio are Trevor Shaw, Conan Steele, and Kim Hodney, and recently declared write-in candidate Kevin Johnson. This is a call-in show, so if you have questions for the school board candidates, please call 225-9655. And we'll start off with introductory remarks from each of the candidates. Tell us a little bit about yourself and why you're running. We're going to start with Trevor.
Thank you, Layla. I appreciate you having us. So my name's Trevor Shaw, and for the last 3 years, I've had the pleasure of serving as a member of the Ketchikan School Board. When I was elected, I was an 18-year-old high school senior, and I ran because public service is my passion, and I believe in the strength and the commitment of our community and its citizens. I ran on my belief in those values and the desire to establish the best educational system that we could possibly provide for our students. Can't even begin to describe how much of an honor it was to be elected by the community that I was raised in. And so after being elected to the school board, I was appointed as the co-chair of the Assembly School Board Liaison Committee. And we've been able to do a lot of great work there. I've had the pleasure of being able to be a big part of improving the relationship between the school board and the assembly. I also serve as the chairman and the founder of the Student Safety Committee. After I was elected to the board, that was a big priority of mine, was working to ensure the physical and emotional safety of our students in the school district. And last year I was elected by the other members of the board to serve as the clerk treasurer of the board for this year. Over the last 3 years, I've had the opportunity to establish great working relationships with not only members of the board, but with the borough assembly and with local businesses and nonprofits, working to establish public-private partnerships and to make sure that we have all the opportunities available to our students that we possibly can provide. And so, and that's when I ran in 2013. That was kind of my big thing, is making sure that the educational system that we provide ensures the opportunity for each student to build an individualized education that works best for them, and that kind of gets them in the direction that they want to go. As a school district, it's not our job to change students. It's our job to make sure that they have the resources, the tools, the knowledge, and the experience to go in the direction that they want to go in life, whether that's college or trade school or military academy or even straight into the workforce. And so I'm proud of the work that our diverse and dynamic board has accomplished over the last 3 years. The graduation rate has gone up. The dropout rate has gone down. We've seen more vocational, technical, career opportunities, classes provided within the school district. And we've seen our relationship with the borough assembly improve to the point of where the school district was fully funded at the local level during this fiscal year. And so I'm just really proud of the work that we've been able to accomplish. And I'm running again and hope to see that the growth and the innovation and those partnerships and relationships that have been built over the last 3 years, that we can expand upon those and continue to move our school district in the right direction and to make sure that we're providing the best education that we can for our students.
Thank you. And Conan Steele?
Thank you for having us tonight. So my name is Conan Steele, and I've lived here in Ketchikan for about 20 years now. It'll be 20 years next month. I've worked as an educator in a community called St. Paul out in the Pribilof Islands for a couple of years. I've also worked as a special ed aide and did my student teaching around here, so I'm fairly familiar with with K-12 education in general, and in particular, I've got some familiarity with the school system around here. I served briefly on the board last year as an appointee. The biggest reason I'm running is I have a little guy that's going to be old enough to start school next year, and I see the single biggest threat to the quality of our schools is the state budget crisis. Unfortunately, we've built out a government and services that ultimately we just can't afford in the long term, and so it was great to see funding stay relatively stable this year. There was a lot of fighting. They cut a couple of things. They really didn't cut much. Probably be more of the same next year. They'll cut a little bit, but they're going to draw heavily on that on that savings until it's gone. So that's what I see. I see we're just going to keep backing ourselves up to this clip until we have to finally take the plunge off of it. Like it or not, when you're presented with less money, you have to figure out how you're going to, what you're going to do with it. And so we're going to have to be innovative. We're going to have to be judicious. We're going to have to be, you know, very smart in how we spend our money in the coming years. And hopefully things stabilize. Hopefully the price of oil goes back over $100, and maybe they build a gas line that'll actually make the state some money instead of losing it. Who knows? I'm not personally counting on any of these things. So hopefully the funding stays where it is. It stays relatively stable, and we come out of it as a state. But I think that ultimately we need to be prepared for how are we going to do more with less, and how are we going to maintain that quality when it comes, because there's really no doubt in my mind that it's coming.
Thank you. And Kim Hodney?
Good evening, Layla. Thanks for having us in tonight. My interest for the school board runs deep in the family. You know, it's all about the kids. It's about the community. If we are stewards of our public education system, it's important that my children get the advantage of public education quality that I had, that my parents had. It's something that we pass on. And out in the world, it is a reflection of the kids and the alumni, those who graduate and those that are in it, in just how well that quality education is how well they can live in the outside world once the high school years are behind them. So it's extremely important. I hope to bring a bit of civility back to the conversation, to the table. What perked my interest last year is there was a lot between the borough and the school board, all on the in-kind services, the budget thing. It blew up. And yes, the relationship, as Trevor related to, is improving, but last year, to me, it's listening to it in the social media and on the radio, it was just, we can do better than this. I want to bring back, you know, take the emotion out of the conversation. Let's deal with the facts. The in-kind servicing, the state slapped our wrist for three different times before they, again this year, kicked it back to us, and the borough manager signed under protest. To me, it's ridiculous. We need to get back to reality, and what's important, and what is important, is the education for the kids. We have some capital projects that need to have attention. There is the standardized testing that the state has got all up in the air and back and forth. That needs some attention brought to it. The dropout rate, what is the output of our education system? One of the best measures, it may not be from testing, it's how are the kids doing? How are they? Are they going to college and graduating college? Are they dropping out before they even get there? Are there GEDs? How can we help give the school system, the teachers, the administration, do they have what they need to put the kids out into the world with the tools to succeed? And not every kid is meant to go to college. There's a lot of kids, like myself, I didn't go to college till 4 years after I graduated high school. Then I was ready for college, and I appreciate it, and I did it. There's working with the public partner, private public partnerships for with local businesses. Vigor, we'll use a shipyard, they're the easiest one, for trades, getting the kids in some vocational training. There are programs that need to be brought back in. They did a lot of cutting years back, and it's time to start to rebuild the programs in the school system and meeting the needs of today's workforce, what the kids have to have out there. It's a lot more technology-based today than it was when I was in high school in 1975. So the whole thing is, it's about providing what the kids need and to prove to the world that they're coming into the workforce with a quality education out of Ketchikan, Alaska.
Thank you. And Kevin Johnson.
Hi, Layla. I'm write-in candidate Kevin Johnson, and I first want to start off by saying thank you to my fellow candidates. As you can see, that we're very passionate about what cause we're trying to serve. you know, I've been coming to Ketchikan, Alaska off and on for the past 22 years, and as a young educator, this is where I started my career. And so for the first 8 years of my young career, this is where I worked. These are the relationships that I formed. These are the people that I connected with. But, you know, I moved away, and I came back. I brought my family back. My son graduated from here last year. My oldest daughter is a senior this year. She'll be graduating. My youngest daughter, Bria, is 10, and she's in fifth grade. but the reason I'm making that point known is we came back because we couldn't find a better community. This is our home. These are the people that we represent. These are our students. And I strongly advocate for progressive education. And I strongly advocate for us striving for excellence. And I think that it's been referred to the lack of connection in our community and with our school district. And what the reason I reference that is that you often hear a lot about what's going on with the borough and the ideas of tied to funding. And is all the information out there, is it transparent or not? I know David Landis personally. I could call him at his house. I don't need the Department of Education telling me how to communicate with him. And that's alarming to me because this is a small community and we have strong values. And those values we're often missing those. I was at the school board meeting the other night, and I just have to share this because it hurt my heart. It hurt my heart to watch one of our math teachers at the high school, Jennifer Carlick, have to answer to something in reference to there was a reading on doing away with like memorialization, like with memorializing people that are events that have happened. Well, this community is 40% Native American or Alaskan Native. What are some of the major ideas and contributing factors to their culture? It's honoring and memorializing. And so I'm sitting there thinking that would take me about 2 seconds. That'd be about a conversation that would last like 30 seconds for me. We're not going to discuss it. We don't need to. It doesn't reflect what our community represents. So that's my big platform. I have 15 years in education. I was where I worked in the public school system for 15 years. I've been a world history teacher. I've taught government. That's probably why I like this politics. I like Trevor because he likes politics. I'm an indigenous educator. And so, I strongly believe in representing minority people. And when I say minority people, I mean all people. Because in a sense, when we're striving for something, we could all be considered a minority in our own way. Whether it's a physical disability, whether it's a different ethnicity background, doesn't matter. But the bottom line is, for me, the reason that I'm running for school board is because I care about our kids and I care about representing the people of this community. And if there's anything else other than that, then I shouldn't be running.
Okay, and I was hoping you would address why you decided to run as a write-in candidate.
Oh, sorry. Yes. Okay. So I had all the greatest intentions to file on time, and unfortunately, life takes its course, and I did not know if I was going to be able to commit the time. And I believe, like I said, representing kids in our community, it's 100% commitment. Well, the great gift of life, though, is that sometimes circumstances change. And yes, it's going to be quite the challenge for me because I have to do it as a write-in. But I think that the opportunity is there, and I've been given the grace to be able to take that opportunity. So I'm in.
Okay, thank you. And I do want to remind listeners, this is a one-hour program. So if you do have questions for the school board candidates, call now at 225-9655. And my next question is budget-related. Expenses do keep going up, as Conan mentioned, and anticipated diminished revenue, at least from the state and possibly from the feds as well. How will you prioritize the district budget? And this time we will start with Conan.
That's a very, very good question. So for quite a while, the district has been using this program-based budgeting strategy, which during normal times is a pretty good strategy. I mean, I understand the philosophy. Rather than, hobble all your soldiers in tough times, you figure out which ones you're going to sacrifice so you keep strong soldiers moving forward, if you will. Well, that's in normal times. What we're looking at here is a situation where revenues, the contribution from the state could be half of what it is now in a few years. And so I think we may be reaching a point where program-based budgeting has reached its limit. It's reached its limit of effectiveness, and you do have to start spreading the hurt. You do start after having to look for efficiency, and just in general, how do you do that? I don't have an easy answer for that, but I know that when the time comes, you've got to be willing to take that on. You've got to be willing to find a solution, just like us in our normal lives. I mean, heaven forbid, I wouldn't want to lose 40% of my income. I've got a standard of living I built up. Again, we built out this great system of state services that ultimately it appears we just can't afford in the long term. Just looking at how are we going to do more with less, because we're going to be expected to serve the students. And again, we're going to have to get innovative in how we do it. Look at less than traditional modes of education that maybe don't involve brick and mortar so much. I think everything should be on the table, but we're going to have to find a workable solution that does the most good for the most people.
And Trevor Shaw?
So the budget is, of course, a major problem. The state of Alaska is in a lot of trouble. You look at the $3.5 billion deficit and what that translates to for Ketchikan, whether it be the direct contribution from the state in state aid to public education or capital improvement projects, not only within the school district but also the borough and the city. And so money all across the board, it's drying up. And I disagree. I think program-based budgeting is the perfect way to go into this, because I think you can't cripple schools by 5% across the board cut, because what does that mean for our district? It means about $1.5 million if you cut out 5%. And so if you do that across the board, there are going to be schools that take more of a hit than others, and possibly limiting the opportunity that they have to provide that education that students need to build their foundation in life. And so the board has been very innovative. We've been working very hard to ensure that we do have those career, vocational, technical opportunities, making sure that we do provide alternative forms of education, whether it be through Fast Track or Reveal Alternative School or a combination thereof. I think all of that is really important. I think that's where we have to put our emphasis, and those are the kind of things that we have to continue investing in. And I don't like looking at our budget as money spent on education. As a school board member, I strive to make sure that every dollar, quote unquote, spent is actually invested in the students, and making sure that that money is being tangibly used to increase those educational opportunities. If you look at the budget crisis, my ultimate goal is to make sure that we get the school district in a good position to weather the fiscal crisis and come out better off than we were before. And there are school districts throughout the state looking at the innovation and creativity and the dynamic of the school district that we have here in Ketchikan. I've had the opportunity to lobby on behalf of our community and for the school district several times. I've gone to the School Boards Association's conference several times. I was just recently nominated by our board to sit on the board of directors for the Association of Alaska School Boards. And I'm always talking to people about what we're doing here in Ketchikan, and they find it really exciting. And so those are conversations that we're going to continue to have, and the state's going to have to adapt. But I think the approach we have to take is making sure that we are in a better position in the end of all of this. And I think we're in a good spot locally. We, like I said, we fully funded the school district in FY17. We didn't have to cut anything. And we have a surplus. We have 74 new students, general population. We have 5 new intensive needs students, $740,000 in additional revenue, and we're seeing growth. And so we're going to have to continue making those investments. We're going to have to continue to develop the relationship that we have with the borough and to make sure that we make our case to them and help them to understand how important it is to run a dynamic, innovative school district. And so I've been thankful to have the opportunity to develop those relationships and to help develop the funding formula that we now have for local education funding. And so that's why I'm running again, is I hope to be able to continue and to expand upon that and make sure that when all this is over, we end up in a better position than we are now.
Thank you. And Kevin Johnson.
I do agree with Trevor. I do think line item budgeting is the way to go. I think that it puts your priorities, it really helps you to get your priorities in line. I think that I'd like to see probably a little bit more communication with the community as a whole when it comes to what do we deem significance? Where are we valuing our importance? I believe that would be highly valuable. One of the things too that I'm a firm believer in is not waiting for the not waiting for somebody else to make sure everything's okay for us. And it's good to hear that the school district has been progressive and we have a surplus. One of the things that I would like to challenge, about the budget process, though, is what are we doing locally that could be progressing our school system financially? What partnerships are we seeking? What partnerships are we involved in? Are there monies out there that we haven't gotten, that we haven't explored yet that could possibly help us with our projected shortcoming of a budget shortfall? See, we already know that the state is going to, we know that the state is facing some deficits, but we don't need to be waiting for them to face their deficits for us to solve our problem. And I'm a firm believer in that. And I just think that there's some avenues with some federal grants that are out there as well. I would like to see what federal grants we're receiving as a school district other than, say, just the different titles that we're entitled to because of our student population and its diverse population. And so, like I said, I think that the way to go as far as is financially or budgeting-wise is stay with line item budgeting, make sure that you have more community input, and be transparent about your budget. And then on top of that, I think that you have to be progressive. But you need to start right here. You need to explore the options that are right here in our community. Thank you.
And Kim Hodney.
Thank you. The way I view the budget is I did some questioning for staff people and administrators and teachers and hit them straight up, do you have what you need to go, to teach for the education? And they were all pretty affirmative with their answers. They feel like they have what they need. They weren't any true shortcomings or they weren't angry as sometimes in hard budget cut areas. It's not that they wanted to lose any more. I strongly believe that all the cutting is done. We have to stop the cutting. We've taken it down about as far as what we can. We need to become probably somewhat more efficient and streamlined in the spending and the money that we have. But I also recognize the fact that was a big issue last year through the borough deal. Everybody was talking about the cap. Got to fund to the cap. Have to fund to the cap. And here in Ketchikan, in my opinion, we're in an excellent place as opposed to Juneau, who's at 102% of the cap. We're at about 70% of the cap. So we have room to grow. So even as bad as it gets around the state and federally, we're not maxed out yet. We have a credit card with a $5,000 limit, and we've only got $3,000 on it. We got room to grow. Now, nobody wants to hear that ugly word. I own property. I'm a conservative as far as fiscal goes, and I'm not interested in a tax increase to raise the school budget. But the point is, if 2 years down the road, if things really start caving in, we still have that room in our cap, in our tax base, to be able to make up an ugly deficit that could be caused by the state or the feds. We're not capped out like Juneau and so many other people. We are in a good position in that respect. The budget is fully funded last year. The communication is being good. The spending is smart. There's always room for growth. We need some programs brought back in, but we've done all the cutting, in my opinion, that we can. Of course, we can always find some more efficiencies, but there's people out there, there's teachers, there's educators, there's staff people that are wearing two and three hats. You know, there's in the special needs students, and there's some areas that need attention, and I get that, and I want to see those fulfilled. We can't shortcome the students. It has to be done well, but fortunately for us, whether they were planning it or not, we're not funded to the cap, and in today's world of cuts and the way that the state and everybody is freaking out, we have room to grow and still be within the cap and where we need to be, unlike some of our northern partners are. They're the ones that are going to lose out. So we're in a good position. I'm not afraid to talk, but that's what the conversation and the compromise is about. But we're not the revenue generators. It's on the borough. We're going to do the best budget, the most responsible budget that can come out of the school board, give it to the borough, and it's going to be on them to come back and forth and give us what we need. It's kind of like at home. I make the money, and the house manager, i.e. my wife, she spends it. She says, no, we need more, so I go find a side job. I mean, you know, I get it.
Thank you. And we do have someone on the phone. And Bree, are you there?
Yeah.
Okay, go ahead with your question, Bree.
What is your biggest obstacle that you face when running for school board?
Okay, your biggest obstacle running for school board. And this time we will start with Kevin.
Well, let's see here. Being a write-in candidate 2.5 weeks before the actual election date, that will be my biggest obstacle of getting on the school board or being elected to the school board. In all seriousness, I really do believe that is a large obstacle for me, because I'm actually going to have voters come in and write my name down and then fill in the oval. Yeah, they got to fill in the oval. And so that's going to be, you know, you hear my plug. You hear my plug. But you know what? Like I said, I'm thankful to get the opportunity.
Thank you. And Conan?
For me, I'd say probably just the fact that I'm not as well known. I am an experienced teacher, but the unfortunate thing about spending all that time out there in St. Paul is I was away from my family and everybody that I know. And the first week that I was there, I was around a bunch of people that I'd only known for 7 days. And so I think my biggest challenge is the fact that, like, you know, I've just, you know, still getting myself started in this career and just getting myself still I still feel like I'm getting myself reestablished back in Ketchikan, even though I've been back for 2 years. So I'd say that's my biggest challenge, is the fact that, like, I'm probably not as well known, and I probably don't do as good of a job as I should at promoting myself.
And Kim?
Obstacle. I don't really find an obstacle for myself for running. I mean, it's there. I made the obligation. I considered it before jumping in, and the time, and which it takes a lot of time. You have to have the attention to it. The only obstacle that I can think of is would be on me not doing what I need to do. You know, the voters are going to, I'm going to present my case, you know, my platform to, and if I don't convey that in a good way, that would be the only obstacle. But this is an opportunity. It's a great deal. There's no obstacles other than those I put out there on my own.
Thank you. And Trevor?
I'm very honored to be able to have the opportunity to run again, and having run before and won and serving on the board, can look back and kind of say that the biggest obstacle, like Kim said, is kind of yourself and making sure that in the enormous task of making sure that you balance a multi-million dollar and over $35 million budget, and making sure you have all of your administrators and your teachers in place, and making sure that you have your capital improvement projects funded and everything, I think the biggest obstacle is making sure that you truly remember what it's all about. And to move beyond all the fluff, all the politics, and to really look back and say, hey, we're here for the students, and that should be our absolute focus. Every single decision that we make should be centered on that. And that really, it's all about the people that we serve, and the people that we serve in the school district are the students. And so I think the biggest obstacle is just making sure that you stay true to that goal. And so, and it's only an obstacle if you let it be, because I'm very passionate about it. It's something that I really enjoy. And so it's you have to choose whether or not you want to let it get in the way. But as long as you're thinking about all the students you're serving, it's kind of hard to get off base.
Thank you, and thank you, Bree, for your question. We have about half an hour left in this candidate call-in forum, so if you do have a question for our school board candidates, now's the time to call, 225-9655. And my next question is, how can the school board support alternative teaching methods that respond to different learning styles? And this time we'll start with Kim.
Well, to be honest, I think that they support it well today, meaning I have a daughter that is a senior and she's in Fast Track, and we have Revilla, and there is Pace, and there is the Charter School and Tongass Arts of School Science, and there are good programs. This is a better environment for alternative learning than what I've come across before. Can it be improved? Probably. And the improvement will come because it expands in distance learning, the partnerships with the college, if we can expand that in alternative learning and get some college credits for the kids at the same time as they're going through finishing out their high school. And I had an interesting conversation, down to the idea of making it possible for a student who's really on the cliff edge one way or the other, if they could go through and even get a GED and still finish out and walk with the class and have a safety net there. Yes, the GED kind of finishes it out, and we know that. But there's an idea floated out there about what can we do to save the kids that are falling through the cracks. There's a lot of kids, it's not their fault. You know, they're the innocent ones, and it's part of the dropout rate. And how can we do whatever we can do for these kids to succeed? They have to finish high school, be it. And the most important thing, in my opinion, is you go through 11 years, you're in that 12th year, and the world circumstances, you fall off. If you can get a GED and still walk with your class, you should be able to do that. How can we best serve them and send them into the workplace with the highest confidence level that they can possibly get? So Fast Track, Revilla, we have good alternative teaching methods going on now.
Thank you. And Kevin?
I think that we do a pretty, you know, I think Ketchikan does, actually the public school system here does a wonderful job in reaching students and giving them, providing them many different alternative opportunities for them to attain their diploma. You know, like I think about some of our students that are on the homeschool program that are taking certain courses still within the public school system, and then, like I said, being able to take some of their credits at home while they're in homeschool. I think that's a unique situation. I have always admired Revilla. I think Revilla, over the years, its reputation has changed tremendously, and it's provided. You know, I won't say it because I think it has a negative connotation, but at one point in time it did. And now it's an avenue for kids to graduate, catch up on credits. And I think that we're also forgetting one other group out there, and that's the ROIC program that they have. Mr. Maynard, they're working with the school district now, and they're, like I said, they're helping students catch up with credits. One of the things that I'm a firm believer in, and I really think that we need to, this is an area that I would like to see if I'm elected. This is an area that I will pursue as a school board member, which is concurrent education for our kids at Ketchikan High School. You know, my son's college roommate right now is a sophomore in college, and Isaac is a freshman. And Isaac was done with his credits to graduate probably when he was a junior. So basically his senior year, he really didn't get a great deal out of it that really prepared him for college. And so, like I said, that's something that I think that needs to change, and we need to look at doing that as quick as possible. But I also got ideas to help it change, because I know the big dilemma is always finance, but I've got a really unique solution for that problem, but I'm not going to share it here.
Okay. It's a secret.
It's a secret!
And Conan Steele.
So we were talking about serving students with different learning styles. I could tell you as a math teacher, that's the world that I've lived in a lot the last few years. I'm consciously aware that they say, you know, when you're coming through teacher training, that there's seven intelligences. I think they may have even expanded that from there. But basically, there's kinesthetic learners, there are more analytical learners, and you've got to be able to cater to all these different learning styles. So you constantly need to be mindful that, you know, if the back, you know, they say different approaches. I use the analogy, if the front door's not open, you go around, try the back. If that's not open, you try the window. If that doesn't work, you try the cellar door. And if that's locked, then you get out a chainsaw and you start cutting a hole in the wall. Well, that's a little extreme. But my point is you have to be able to come at it from lots of different angles. And so I think just some targeted teacher training, like once or twice a year, just reminding teacher that you've got all the teachers, you've got all these different learning styles. And not like you really need to remind a teacher, they know this, but just focusing in on, like, okay, we need to do this lots of different ways. As far as, like, when the kids get older, he mentioned the ROIC program and the Fast Track program. My son Bailey actually graduated from he went through ROIC's program and the Revilla program. He got his diploma this last, it was February. And he's off trying his first semester at UAA up at the Mat-Su campus. So on a normal schedule, he wouldn't have been graduating until this spring when he was, like, past 19. And so just the way that they got him caught up, I mean, a lot of it was kicking and screaming, but it worked for him. For whatever reason, it worked for him when not a whole lot else was working. So you've just got to have lots of different options available to students. The bottom line is that they learn something. We can't get caught up in, like, you know, how they learn it or when they learn it. The bottom line is that they learn it.
Thank you. And Trevor Shaw.
The brick-and-mortar, cookie-cutter style of education of the 60s is over, and we're innovating here in Ketchikan. We're doing a phenomenal job. with the alternative styles and options of education that we're providing. And people throughout the state are envious of it. The last time I was in Juneau, lobbying for the school district, I talked to multiple legislators who said, well, how can we do this statewide? Because they're looking for efficiencies as well. And so we have of course Fast Track, Revilla. We have the Tribal Scholars Program, which is absolutely fantastic, founded through a private partnership with KIC, and then we have ROIC, we have the Alaska Digital Academy. We're just doing a really great job, and I was one of those students who benefited tremendously from that. I graduated through Fast Track, taking classes online at home and at the high school. And that's what suited my individual personal education style. And it really allowed me to succeed. And that was one of the big reasons that I ran for school board, because I wanted to take the individual opportunity that I had and make sure that was available to all students. Almost 10% of our students in the district are in some type of alternative, full-time alternative education program, whether it be Revilla or Fast Track or combinations thereof. And so we're doing a really good job of taking the puzzle of education and making it fit to the way that works for each student, so that they have the opportunities they need to succeed and to do extremely well. And so the board has put a major emphasis on that. I've been very proud of being able to advocate for that, because I've seen the successes of it. I've seen how it works. And I want to make sure that all of our students have those opportunities. And I think it's really beneficial to every student in the district, especially as we look at some cost constraints and having to look at those efficiencies within the district, because we're kind of at the point where we can't cut anymore, so we have to put our emphasis on the things that work well and that do the best for the students that we possibly can do. And so I'm very excited about those opportunities, and I hope to be able to help those continue to grow in this next 3 years.
Thank you. And go ahead and give us a call if you have a question for our Ketchikan School Board members, 225-9655. And my next question was submitted ahead of time by somebody who's probably listening right now. And this person was wondering how the school district can address students' emotional health to improve their learnings, their individual learning. And this time we will start with Conan.
Well, first of all, on the front lines as teachers, paraprofessionals, you're the ones dealing with the kids on a day-to-day basis. You usually get the first warning signs that something's wrong, and just talking to the kid, finding out what's going on. That's the first step, is just finding out that there's something going on, and then being proactive and seeking out the resources that are available to address that, because there are resources that are available to address, these things like depression or suicidal thoughts or abuse at home. Unfortunately, I think where we miss it a lot of the time is just identifying that, this student needs this. So I think the big emphasis should just be on identifying students, because it's very, very easy for people to slip through the cracks, especially when you're talking about something where there's shame involved. A lot of the time you're going to just act like nothing's wrong. So just paying attention to what's going on, getting to know your students, and identifying when there's something wrong, when they're not being themselves, and just making sure, following through, and making sure that they get the help that they need, that they've been referred to the services that are available.
Thank you. And Kevin?
I think that strong leadership in our school buildings, and, all the way from the top, from our board members all the way down to the person that is taking our kids to school driving the bus, we should all be trained. We should all want to recognize if a kid is struggling, or if there's some emotional issue that's causing them to have a distraction while attending our school system. I think as a community, that saddens me to hear something like that, because our community is a community that cares. It's always cared. I could just give you tons of examples of different circumstances that have happened in this town where this town has rose up to support people and care. I think if you foster that into your school climate, then the domino effect will start. Students will start to care. And you are right, Conan. If teachers care, students care. You know why? Because I was a teacher. I cared. And I cared enough to look for those kids that struggled a little bit emotionally. And so, you know, and saying that, I just think that, you know, like, you've got to create that culture, that atmosphere, that climate. And when you create that climate and you give kids those avenues to feel comfortable in meeting with you or meeting with somebody in the school or meeting with the peer, and you can help them get the resources they need to seek out the help that they need. But you know, I saw something really cool the other day talking about kids' worlds and living in them. It was called the I don't want to eat alone at lunch app. It was the coolest app in the world. I thought, man, that makes sense. That's connected to their generation. And so, you know, I thought, shoot, there's a start right there.
Thank you. And Trevor?
Absolutely, making sure that teachers are able, and not only teachers, but everyone within the school district, all the way staff, board members, volunteers, making sure that they're not only able to identify those students, but also that they're able to make the connections necessary to provide the tools and resources to help the student move in a positive direction. I was on, after I was elected to the school board in 2013, one of my first major initiatives was to found the Student Safety Committee, and not only physical safety of our students, but the emotional safety of our students, and making sure that we have a positive environment that promotes self-growth, self-worth, and also positive relationships between each other, and how students can help build each other up. So we're a tight-knit community. We have strong values. We're committed to what we believe in, and we all believe in each other. And it always amazes me to see everyone in our community, from adults to students, rally around each other when there's a problem, and just making sure that we foster that type of environment. That's been my goal, and that will continue to be my goal. And just making sure that we can, at the board level, identify some of those concerns. One of the big things we do is the Climate Connectedness Survey provided by AASB. They administer that, and we're able to really look at the results and kind of get the view of how students view not only the teachers and the administrators, but also their fellow students, so we can respond in a way that will be effective. And so we've been really good at that. There's room for growth. We're using more and more data and making sure that we identify those students and that we can get them the help they need, and that students are also able to have the tools to help each other.
Thank you. And Kim?
It's to me, it's a sad commentary in a general way on a social commentary on us today that we even have to be here with the digital age and the social media that's out there. What kids deal with stress-wise and their lives is far different than what it was in my day, and it's a whole lot faster than the way that it happened. We're tuned into it. The teachers get it. It kills me that teachers have to be distracted from what they do in learning, but it's a reality. The kids' lives, not all of them out there are Snow White and unicorns and rainbows. There's some ugly lives and there's some bad things, and the kids are the innocent ones. It's not their fault. And we have to do everything we can to protect them and to give them the help. But just as importantly, we need to ensure that the educators, that the staff, the administration, they are equipped and trained to deal with and recognize. And I know that training goes on, and they're tuned into those kids. The teacher spends more waking hours with my daughters than I do. And it's just a fact. Hopefully I know them somewhat better than the teachers do. But it's out there. It's ill in our society today. And unfortunately, it happens and it plays itself out in the schools. So we need to support the teachers, give the school system the tools they need there again to keep the kids from falling through the cracks, identify what's going on, and make the child feel included as a part of, and that they can trust. It's all about the trust, and are they comfortable enough and trust to even open up once they're confronted and say, hey, is there a problem, and instead of just shying away. We have to build a culture, an environment of safe for them.
Thank you. And we do have a couple of submitted questions. Somebody called in but didn't want to speak over the air. And the first one is relatively simple. Do you have any conflicts of interest that voters should know about? Relatives, I'm guessing, working in the school district. And this time we'll start with Trevor.
I do not.
Thank you. And Conan?
I have no conflicts of interest that I'm aware of.
Thank you. And Kim?
No conflicts. I argue with myself, but that's my own conflict. No problem.
And Kevin?
Well, let's see here. That question might be, that one might be pointed at me since I have a wonderful wife who's been teaching and has been an administrator and is currently working as a superintendent, or working on her getting endorsed as a superintendent. The unique thing about my conflict of interest is she's still my boss at home. But anyway, the second part to that is this right here. You know, the school board, we deal with policy. And by time, you know, there are many layers and there are many regulations put in place where we let our administration deal with our personnel. But I guess, long story short, to me, that almost sounds like an integrity question. I love my wife. My wife's a tremendous teacher. Go into her classroom and watch. She's got other people that can judge her. I don't need to.
Okay. Thank you very much. And the next submitted question is, how do candidates feel if a teacher had a marijuana dispensary? Would that be a problem? And we'll start with Conan Steele.
That's an interesting question. I wonder how many teachers in Ketchikan own liquor stores or shares in liquor establishments. I mean, it is legal under state law, and as long as that teacher isn't flaunting it at school, talking about it at school, promoting it at school, keeps it completely separate, it's hard for me to see how legally we wouldn't be harassing that individual if we made it an issue.
Thank you. And Trevor Shaw?
I completely agree. What a teacher does during their personal time with regard to their business interests, they're citizens. They have rights to. They have the right to take part in any legal businesses in the state of Alaska. That includes liquor and now marijuana too, as long as they go through the proper process. But as a school board, that's not for us to determine. It's not for us to decide whether or not that person has the right to that kind of business. As long as they're not using school resources or their time at work to promote that or to for the advantage of that business, then that's their personal choice. It's true with marijuana. It's true with somebody who wants to sell stamps. And so, I mean, that's not really any of our concern. And so as long as it doesn't negatively impact the students.
Thank you. And Kevin Johnson?
I'm with Trevor. I believe in free enterprise. And I think that as citizens, we have personal rights to do what's legal. And I know teachers are always on the clock. They're always on the job. I get all that. But you know what? Hey, if the law says they can do it, I can't tell them they can't.
Thank you. And Kim?
Actually, I have to agree with my other candidates here. There, it's a legal enterprise out there. Yeah, we do have a drug-free zone for schools and all of that. You know, that's not a problem. We don't drug test our teachers. That's not a problem. It's just I'm not up for a lawsuit. Let's just put it that way. You know, that's a personal call. That's their moral compass, however they want to go with it. But you have a business on the side, all the more power to you, as long as there's no effect into the school, and the optics of it, well, it depends on whose lens you're looking through.
Thank you. And we have about 10 minutes left in this candidate call-in show for Ketchikan School Board candidates. And this may be the last question. There may be some long-winded answers to this one. I'm not sure. But the debate over in-kind or contracted services kind of dominated school board and assembly meetings this past spring. But the response from the public was pretty much a big shrug from my perspective as the person reporting on these things. So why is this issue important, and will it continue to be an issue for the next budget cycle? And this time we'll start with Kevin.
You know, if I have anything, if I'm elected and I have a voice, I'm going to tell you that this process will be much simpler. Number one, because of what's taken place already with history. History says that that the school board and the borough have been working together progressively. Number two, I think that both sides are going to attack that specific topic and that specific issue lighthearted. And I think that if I'm elected, then there will be no barrier. This isn't us against them. This is us in this together for our kids. That's what this is about. And so we have to figure out how to all be big people and be adults and get along. But no, honestly, I don't think that it'll be an issue in the future.
Thank you. And Conan Steele.
Well, as far as the community interest this time around, I think it's much like if you have two kids that are constantly squabbling, you start kind of tuning that out a little bit. Not to say that it's not important. Like, you know, you notice, like, you know, you refocus again the second, like, one of them's whapped the other over the head with the, you know, with the Tonka truck or something like that. But, I've got some interesting analogies. You know, it's interesting. I could see both sides of it. The argument that they inordinately inflate these figures to justify funding us less, that, you know, they don't fund us to the cap. A lot of boroughs around the state of comparable size do. Whether they should or not, you know, maybe they could do a little bit more. But at the same time, like, you know, the borough's trying to, you know, schools aren't the only thing they're trying to fund. So I think it is encouraging that the borough and the school board have worked together cooperatively and constructively the last couple of years to resolve this issue. It's probably going to continue to be an issue. You probably heard the Department of Education rejected some of the things that that the borough filed. And, you know, so it's going to be interesting to see how it plays out, but it looks like we're on pretty good road, on a pretty good road to finding some common ground.
Thank you. And Kim?
Well, this is one of the issues that got me to want to run for this, because it was so contentious last year on the in-kind services. The state has spoke. They kicked our budget back. They denied it. It was signed under protest. They pulled out the in-kind services. They've told us, on that, I believe, is the fourth occasion, you cannot have that in your budget. It is not allowable under the state rules. And so, as far as I'm concerned, the argument's over. It's not going to happen next time. You're not going to put them there. And if we have to further the conversation, again, of course we will. But we've been told our budget's been rejected with those in-kind services in there. They've been taken out. It's done. Figure it out another way, which we'll have to do. But it's a moot point anymore. It's not there.
And Trevor.
So I was elected to the school board the year after contractual services was implemented. And so at the height of the battle there, I was able to, because a lot of members of both the board and the assembly had an emotional investment on both sides. So as a brand new school board member, I was able to come in and say, this process isn't working, and I can look at it from both sides and understand from both sides that it's not, and that there's validity to both arguments. And so the relationship between the assembly and the school board was extremely, extremely uneasy for my first 2 years on the board. But this past year, I was able to work with Assemblymember Glenn Thompson. We wrote the ordinance that got rid of contractual services and moved us back over to in-kind services. We were able to put on the shelf this idea that the borough could choose any arbitrary amount for these services and require that the school district accept that. We said, no, this isn't working. This is bad for our community. We're not going to do it anymore. And that passed unanimously on both ends. So I'm very glad to have been able to be a part of putting that to rest and moving on over to a new chapter and being able to work with the assembly to fully fund the school district and to establish a good working relationship and understand that we are the Ketchikan Gateway Borough School District. And one of the reasons that the Ketchikan Gateway Borough was mandated into incorporation was for the purpose of providing for a public education system. So we're all in this together. We all live in the same house under the same roof with the same people. And so we just have to remember that. And to take the approach that we just recently took to in-kind services, there was no bickering whatsoever between the school board and the assembly on the approach that we were going to take to the Department of Education and Early Development rejecting in-kind services, because we're not going to fight over that anymore. It's been an issue, but it's not the key issue by any means. It's nowhere even close. And so we're going to talk to the Department of Education Early Development, because we do agree that some of those charges are, there are actually charges there that the borough is incurring for the school district. And so we're working with them, with the chart of accounts, which is the regulations that determine what can be counted as in-kind contributions. And but there was no contention there at all. We are on a really good page. We're working well together, and we're working out a way to ensure that we respond correctly to the state's budget crisis, and we're moving in a positive direction. And so we're all kind of ready to move beyond the shadow of what was contractual services and work together for the benefit of the students. And so people talking about, well, once next year it won't be an issue. It's not even an issue this year. So we've done a good job of being able to work together and move beyond some of the disagreements we've had in the past. And we're on very good footing, and everything's going really well in that regard, and I'm excited to see that relationship continue to grow in a positive direction.
Thank you. And we have time for somewhat brief closing statements from each of our Ketchikan School Board candidates, and this time we'll start with Kim.
Again, thanks so much for having us tonight. I want to thank the KRBD for the time, my fellow candidates. It's always fun to get together, and we all have great faces for the radio, I can tell. And it's a privilege. It will be a privilege to serve on the school board for Ketchikan. I believe in the stewardship of this great public education system that we have, with all the alternative learnings that we have. The resources are there. Everything can always be improved. The relationships are growing and improving. And it's important that we give the educators and the students all of the tools and the opportunities they need to succeed, whether it's college prep, vocational prep, whatever it takes for these kids to grow through the system, starting at kindergarten. It's so much emphasis, you know, it always ends up with the high school kids. I have a 6-year-old daughter that started kindergarten, and I have another girl who's in fourth grade, and then I have a senior. So I'm vested all the way through the school system right now, and it's important to me, but it's important to everyone. I can bring some calm, fact-based conversation into the mix, and I believe that I can give you an excellent job. The output, I have 100% into the game. It's what I want to do. I'm here because I made a long, considered decision to get here, and I appreciate your vote on the 4th of October. This show will be on next Wednesday, too, at the Cape Hawks, by the way.
Thank you. And Kevin?
I want to say thank you to my fellow candidates, and I want to thank you, Layla, for having us on, or having me on. And, you know, it's an honor. It's such an honor to represent our community. It's an honor to have the opportunity to represent our community, especially in my circumstances, coming in as a write-in candidate and having to write my name down and fill in the oval. But just some closing remarks. I'm pretty straightforward as an individual. I try to tell people, you know, there's three things that I can promise you as your elected school board member. The first thing that I can promise you is that I won't make promises that I can't keep. That's not who I am. I like to go home at night. I like to put my head on that pillow, and I like to go to bed. So integrity's huge to me. It's really the gist of what we have and who we are. The second thing I'll tell you is that I'll always listen. I'll always do my research before I make a vote. That's important to us and our kids and our community and our school district. I think that, you know, often elected officials get elected, and the next thing you know, they kind of are off voting on their own and voting for major, you know, voting on ideas of their own that have a major impact on the people that elected them. That won't be me. The third thing I promise you, and it is something that, because I'm very active in this community, I'll be proactive in reaching out to people. I won't wait for them to come to me. I'll be out there. I'll be at basketball games. I'll be at baseball games. I'll be at plays. I'll be downtown running. But you'll see my face, and you'll know I'm there. Your kids will know I'm there. I'll be refereeing. I'll be somewhere involved, actively engaged in this community, and be somewhere that you can reach out, and I'll reach out to you, I promise. That's a promise. Those are the three promises that I make. some things that I also want to really make sure that I reaffirm and make new connections with or reestablish partnerships, community connections. We talked a lot tonight about just different identities here in town that have a major impact in our school district that we work with. I think we forgot to mention community connections. I think KIC was mentioned tonight. I think KIC is a major, major factor. I think the city of Saxman was left out. We need to reach out to the city of Saxman, and we need to see if there's any connections that we can make with them that can help us with our school system that we currently have. And then RYC, which we did make recognition to, I believe that they're huge. I stopped and visited with Mr. Duckworth the other day, and he shared some concerns with me. And, you know, I said, you know, Jack, if I get elected, your voice will be heard. And that's my big promise. Thank you.
Thank you. And Conan Steele?
Well, being that I have a young one that's going to be starting school very soon, and just knowing that, you know, about the general quality of schools we've had around here, I'm very interested in maintaining that quality. I would hope that the schools around here are just as good and well-funded as they are now, 5 years from now. The well-funded part I'm not as confident about, and so that's what I see. I see a storm coming. I see a series of problems that we're going to need to solve, and maybe it's just my math teacher background, but I fully embrace having to solve problems, as scary as it may be. They say the worst thing that you could do is nothing most of the time.
Thank you. And Trevor Shaw.
So the main reason I'm running is this is my passion. This is what I enjoy doing, and it's been the opportunity of a lifetime to serve on the board for the last 3 years and to really get to know not only the board members and the teachers and the administrators, but also the students. And to, like I said, through all of the fluff, all of the politics, look back down and say, we're doing this for you. And it's truly a good feeling. And so the reason I'm running, I want to be able to do this again. I really enjoy what I'm doing. I enjoy advocating for our students and the success and innovation that we're seeing here in our school district. And the board has done a really good job over the last 3 years, really kind of doing this comprehensive strategic planning for what we've identified as some crises coming down the pike, and making sure that through it all that we come out on top and that we're providing the best educational opportunities for our students that we possibly can. Having been able to develop the relationship with the school board members, with the borough, with businesses, nonprofits, school board members throughout the state, and people in state government, and working to make those connections to not only showcase how well things are going here in Ketchikan, but also to be able to kind of share some of those ideas and our successes, and we hope to be able to see that statewide. And so it really has, it's something I enjoy doing. I've enjoyed doing it for the last 3 years. And I hope to have the opportunity to be able to build upon those successes, relationships, experience that I have. And I hope to continue to bring sound judgment, a strong vision, and solid values to the school district, because I think that's what our community deserves. And so I would humbly ask for your vote again on October 4th.
Thank you. And that is it for KRBD's School Board Call-In Forum. I've been your host, Layla Carey. Thanks to the candidates for coming by, and thanks to everyone who called in with a question. For more special election coverage, tune into KRBD at 7 p.m. next Tuesday, September 27th, for a call-in forum featuring candidates for Borough Assembly. And please remember to vote on October 4th. Good night.